next matter before the court is Grinnell Mutual Reinsurance Company versus Fisher. The next matter before the court is Grinnell Mutual Reinsurance Company versus Fisher. Counsel, whenever you're ready.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Douglas Mers, and I represent appellant Robert Fisher in these proceedings. This is an appeal from the order of the District Court of Richardson County, Nebraska, that entered an order on a motion for summary judgment against my client, determining that the court had jurisdiction to enter an order pursuant to the Declaratory Judgment Act and finding that there was no coverage under a commercial liability insurance policy that was issued by the plaintiff in those proceedings. This is a case where the plaintiff filed a suit or declaratory judgment against my client to interpret a commercial liability policy that had been issued to my client after my client was sued almost 2 years prior from a customer of his by the name of Smith, alleging various causes of action, including a claim for negligence. And as part of that negligence claim, she claimed, according to the evidence that was offered at the time of summary judgment, that the roof that Mr. Fisher installed leaked and damaged property of Fisher and her and others. That the district court decided that it did have jurisdiction to hear the case on a complaint for summary judgment when the evidence indicated at that time, up to the present time, that the plaintiff had providing a defense to the lawsuit. The plaintiff, Grinnell Mutual Reinsurance Company, has never denied providing defense to this suit, and it's Mr. Fisher's contention that there was no controversy, and since there was no controversy, complaint for declaratory judgment was not appropriate.
Wasn't the defense, though, under a reservation of rights?
That's correct.
Doesn't that alter your argument?
Well, it doesn't, because they're still providing that defense. I mean, if Grinnell Mutual Insurance Company thinks that they don't have an obligation to provide a defense or coverage, all they have to do is quit doing it. But they didn't do that. I mean, they're still performing under that agreement Mr. Fisher has with them, and the reservation gives them a right to do that, but they haven't done it.
So this isn't about the duty to defend. It's really about, is there a duty to indemnify to the extent that there are damages? But your argument is we don't know yet what those damages might be, if there are any.
Well, that's the second issue, and that's exactly right, because if you look at the hearing where that we had on the motion for summary judgment, look at the evidence. And what is the evidence? I mean, the evidence the plaintiff offered was a number of pleadings and some depositions. And one of the depositions they offered was by Hugh Sheridan. And who is Mr. Sheridan? That's an employee for the plaintiff, Grinnell Mutual Reinsurance Company. And what did he say? You know, we went through the policy, and it's a lengthy policy. I mean, I'll admit that, and he even admitted it's a confusing policy. But what did he say? He said that based upon the fact that she is claiming that the roof leaked and caused damage to others, that there is coverage and they have a duty to defend. Now, if she can prove that or not, we don't know. But because of that fact, or because we don't know what the facts are going to be, but by the fact that she's made the allegation, and by making that allegation, that requires the plaintiff to provide not only a duty to defend, but then if she's successful on her claim, then maybe some indemnification under the terms of the policy.
Mr. Mers, to the extent we might agree that there's some factual issues with regard to the damages that are still potentially existing with regard to the construction, what about the part of the lawsuit by Smith against your client that alleges a breach of contract? Would you agree that it would be appropriate for the district court to enter a declaratory judgment in part as to any damages arising out of the breach of contract claim?
Well, the difficulty with that, Your Honor, is the fact that we don't know what of the various claims she's alleged that she's actually going to pursue at time of trial. I mean, as I understand, you know, our pleading, you know, situation in Nebraska is under notice pleading. And under notice pleadings, and the Supreme Court recently decided a case where you don't even have to allege a cause of action to be entitled to pursue a claim. And I guess the case is actually just, it was a Tyson versus North Platte. And it appears that if the court would take that position, then, you know, we don't know if, I mean, we don't know what she's going to pursue at time of trial. And so far, Grinnell has defended Mr. Fisher on those claims, and I think generally that's what insurance companies do because they don't want to parcel out different causes of action. They want to be in control of the complete case. But if this court determines that that it would be appropriate for the district court to parcel out those issues, then I agree that Grinnell does not have any obligation under the breach of contract claim.
Yeah, because you would agree that this policy does not cover breach of contract.
I agree with
damage,
that, yes, Your Honor.
Right? Yeah.
I agree with that.
Right. And so really the dispute centers around property damage, and it property damage must arise from an occurrence that something other than just negligent workmanship. Right, there has to be some kind of an accident that causes the property damage. I think what I heard you say and what you've written in your brief is that pertains to this water damage that may have damaged some personal property.
Well, that's exactly right. And actually, there's a Supreme Court decision that talks about, you know, a case that is almost exactly on point where a person installed a roof and it did cause damage to property other than the work product or what the contractor did, and the court determined that unworkmanship is not in itself covered, but if it covers damages of others, then that is an occurrence and there is coverage, which is exactly what the Smith is claiming in part in her lawsuit in Nemaha County. Mm-hmm. So,
what case were you referring to?
Is that the Drake Williams case?
No, it's the auto owners versus Home Pride, I think, is the case that was cited in the brief. And I think that's a real good case because, you know, in the whole litigation, there's been a lot of talk or a lot of discussion or a lot of issues involving if this is an occurrence or not. But if you look at the deposition of Mr. Sheridan, if you look at the deposition of Tammy Holmes, who's the attorney for GMC Insurance Company, I mean, they all agree that if there's damage, that a leaking roof that causes damage to property of others, there is coverage. So I would submit to this court that because of that, that the motion that the district court entered for summary judgment was totally inappropriate. And I guess it just, and it's just, I guess the issue of even following a declaratory judgment at this stage without actually, after providing a defense this long and not actually denying coverage or defense of the lawsuit was inappropriate to begin with. If you have no further questions, thank you.
Thank you very much. Please step back. Counsel, whenever you're ready.
May it please the court. I'm Marv Kiekhafer. I blew up here in the wind from Council Bluffs today to represent Grinnell Mutual Insurance Company. This is an insurance coverage case that usually causes our eyes to glaze over. And this one has been going on for a long time. There were lots of things that are not in the record that occurred in this case, but that's why it took a long time. I think what you get to the bottom line on this case, Your Honors, is that this essentially was a contract-based claim made against this contractor that was going to rebuild this house for this lady. And there are two depositions that were taken of Ms. Smith, the plaintiff in the underlying lawsuit. And you read that deposition, it's clear that the essence of her claim was breach of contract. She said the home was not constructed as agreed. It was not completed.
There's no question that there's a breach of contract claim that she's got out there pending against Mr. Fisher.
Well,
but there's also the allegations in her affidavit that potentially raise some factual issues that can't be decided at this point with regard to this property damage as a result of a leaking.
And I think that, and I believe the district court in the judge's order talked about a couple of endorsements or endorsements on the policy that might provide very limited coverage under those circumstances. I think one instance may be up to $5,000, another instance up to $1,000. I don't think that's the way this case was going to go when it went to the, if it would have been submitted in the underlying case.
But you heard me ask Mr. Mers that, you know, to the extent there might be some factual issues with regard to property damage that might be covered under the policy. I understand it could be very limited, but it might be covered. Could the court have done a partial declaratory judgment as to the breach of contract?
Yeah,
issue?
I think I even mentioned that in my brief. Yeah. I said I don't say that's what should have happened, mm-hmm. but if the court felt that there was something left to be done, and if there was any error whatsoever in this case, mm-hmm. it would be that that could have been left open under the Summary Judgment Act for further determination. I can just about tell you that if the court had done that, the underlying case would have disappeared anyhow. If you talked to Ms. Smith's attorney. But I think the only policy at issue here was the one that's identified as Exhibit 20. That has all the stuff in it. But essentially, this lady was looking for recovery of $85,000 that she had already paid. That's the way this thing looked from day one. That's the way I think Mr. Fisher's attorneys saw it from day one when the notice of suit went in. It said, insured's lawyer slash counsel would like confirmation slash denial of coverage for contractual liability. Mm-hmm. That's the way everybody saw this from day one. The reservation of rights letter, of course, was issued because there were some allegations of, quote, negligence. And insurance companies do that all the time. And there seems to be some confusion here that if you undertake to defend a claim that you're admitting that there's coverage. Well, of course, that isn't how it works at all. And insurance companies, once they undertake to defend, they don't stop in the middle of everything and not defend anymore unless a court might tell them that. But I'm sure there are cases out there where insurance companies have stopped in the middle of things and gotten in trouble for, quote, bad faith. There was a bad faith counterclaim here. I haven't heard anything about that, but there was no basis for that anyhow.
To the extent, you know, we've talked about there may be some factual issues with regard to property damage that maybe survives there being an occurrence part of the evaluation. But then would it be your position that there are then exceptions that might come into play that would still allow the declaratory judgment to stand?
Yeah, there's the damage to property exclusion, I think that's in there, damage to your product or damage to your work. I don't have them all in my notes
right,
here, and frankly,
right.
I've forgotten.
I mean, you put everything in your brief. I'm kind of curious about the impaired property exclusion, damage arising out of a defect or dangerous condition or delay or failure to perform a contract. Is that applicable here?
Well, sure. I mean, that was one of the things she was alleging here. He failed to complete the house, failed to deliver materials. Work was not completed in a workmanlike manner.
So would you agree there may have been an occurrence, but that even if there was, there's an exception to coverage?
Well, I'm not sure there was an occurrence, and I think the district court found that there was no occurrence.
But
there wasn't an accident.
The court didn't really tell us how it got there either.
True. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of clarity there. I'll agree mm-hmm. with that. But if you look at the policy, it says there's supposed to be some kind of an event accident.
Right.
I think I cited some language in the brief about what Nebraska sees as an accident.
And I think there isn't there a case out there that talks about water leakage qualifying as an accident?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't think I've got something like that in my brief that I can recall. frankly, I'm a little under the weather, I'm sorry. I think the court did hit the right tone there. There was not an occurrence as defined by the policy. I think the language that I drew out of a Nebraska case is an accident is an event which takes place without foresight or expectation of those affected. That was the FAR design case. I do have that noted in my notes here. And certainly, the breach of contract and all those things would not be an accident. I think even if you get in then to the fact that there may be an occurrence in those exclusions that you mentioned a little bit ago, Your Honor, would probably come into play to say that there's no coverage here. I frankly don't have a whole lot more to say. I think the district judge made the right decision. It took us a long time to get there, and I think Mr. Mers and I are both glad that we're at this point where we can see a light at the end of this tunnel. And so I will submit the matter to you and ask that you affirm the actions of the district court.
But you would agree that you can't, a court can't enter a declaratory judgment unless it can do it just as a matter of law, that there's no issues of fact in the summary judgment motion for a declaratory judgment. There's no issues of fact. The court can, and the contract cannot be ambiguous either. And in this case, there is some evidence, granted it's not very significant, but there's some evidence of what might be properly qualified as property damage under the policy.
That is what has been alleged. There are a couple of affidavits that allege that. I think if you look at Ms. Smith's deposition testimony, I don't know that there's anything like that. I could be wrong. I haven't looked at those in great detail lately. But
the affidavits, there's no objection. There was no objection.
No, they say what they say, Your Honor. And I believe the district judge, I think, saw those. It's been alleged that he ignored those. I don't think he ignored those. I think he looked at the entire thing and found that this specific event really is a contract action and it shouldn't be a matter of insurance. And let's
and it may 99% be that.
Yeah.
But there could be that 1% that deals with these unknown facts not yet determined. Would you agree?
I don't want to agree with
that. I know
that.
You don't want to.
Because I frankly don't know what those facts are, if there are any. There's not a lot of clarity in the record about that. And I think that's one of the problems in the case. It was trying to be fit into something that it really isn't. And had the underlying case been allowed to go to trial, based on my years of experience, I don't think the plaintiff had a chance of winning that case under the facts as I understood them. And Mr. Welsh, who represented the lady in that action, I think probably saw the same thing, but didn't know what to do while this insurance coverage was out there.
Is it your position it would at least be helpful in terms of our review, though, under the declaratory judgment and summary judgment standard, that we can parcel out breach of contract from the property damage?
Well, yeah, if you see that there were, quote, issues of fact that should be determined, sure, I have to agree that the judge could have done a partial summary judgment. That's very clear under the Summary Judgment Act.
Mm-hmm.
And could have thrown out virtually everything.
99%.
Yeah, maybe so. And we would have ended up with some kind of a lawsuit down there where the insurance company might have had to pay $1,000 or $5,000. And it was being defended. So that's as far as we can go. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let me step back. I believe the appellant has some time left. Counsel?
Yes, Your Honor. I think the court took consideration that this wasn't a trial we had. This is on a motion for summary judgment. And honestly, this court knows the motion for summary judgment, there can be no material issues of fact and controversy. Well, just from the argument of everybody and the record that's before you, I mean, that's hardly the case. I mean, there's all sorts of issues fact that are in controversy, you know, what property was damaged, who owned the property, what was its value,
You know, frankly, there's even issues of what the insurance policy consists of, because if you look at the transcript, when they filed the lawsuit, they said the policy consists of something like 16 pages. Then we got it up to 64 pages. Now we're up to 108 pages. And there's testimony in the record that shows from Hugh Sheridan, who provided a list of what the endorsements are supposed to be on the policy, and they're not even part of the 108 pages that of the policy that's submitted. So there is a material fact of even what the policy consists of.
But I'd like to ask, though, even if we agreed that there's some issues of fact with regard to what this property damage might be, what about the exclusion, especially like the one I raised, the impaired property exclusion, which talks about damages arising from a delay or failure to perform a contract?
Well, I think the exclusion basically pertains to Mr. Fisher's work product or what he did of not paying for that property damage. I mean, you know, this is a long, I mean, this is a 108-page policy, but the concept is fairly simple. And like the Mr. Sheridan and I think even Amy Homestead, it's like a plumber coming to your house and to fix a water line, and they are negligent when they fix it, it breaks and causes damage to your property. Well, there's coverage under a commercial liability policy for the damage that you sustain. There's just no coverage to repair what the insured negligently installed. And that's what this case is all about. And so there are all sorts of exclusions. There are all sorts of exclusions that are excluded. There's modifications to exclusions. I mean, this thing, I mean, you could wrap yourself up in I don't know how many different circles trying to figure out what's excluded and what's included. But the basic premise is the fact that it doesn't cover his product, but it does cover damages to other people, and that's what happened in this case. We just don't know exactly who those other people are, what the value of that property is, and what the cause of those damages were, other than the affidavits have been offered where that's what she's claiming. And even though it may be a frivolous claim, the insurance company still has a duty to defend my insured.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Appreciate you.
Thank you both.
The matter is deemed submitted and counsel are excused.
Safe travels back to Iowa.
Yeah. Yes.
Stay on the road.
Let me tell you, you'll be just fine.